Today's episode of Absurdity is sponsored by The Haystack. The Haystack is a voice for young adults in the Seventh-day Adventist Church that produces articles, music reviews, videos, and more. To check them out, go to www.thehaystack.org. The Haystack, life, culture, theology. Hey guys, just before we jump into today's episode, I wanted to let you know of something really big that just happened. Two of my friends and some more lost pretty much everything in a fire that happened in their apartment building just a couple nights ago before this episode was launched. And there is a couple GoFundMes for them. They're great friends of mine, and they lost everything but the clothes on their back. And between our entire audience base, we could easily take care of them. So please go check out the GoFundMes in the show notes and go show them some support. It's Felipe Mendez and Orlando Lizardi, and they mean the world to me as human beings, as people. I have a ton of great deal of respect for them. Felipe actually does the designs and the graphic design work for Jose Briones on his podcast, Disruptive Adventism. And he has basically dedicated himself to ministry and supporting those in graphic design. And so anything we can do to support them and to help them would mean the world to me and would mean the world to them as well. So go check out the GoFundMes. Both links are in the description below. They're both run by Jose Briones. So you know that voice, you know that person, that name, because he hosts Disruptive Adventism and works very closely with Felipe. So it is a trustworthy source, I promise. But go check those out, donate, and let's support people that that really need it. Love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Here's today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome back to Absurdity. We are right in it. Episode 102. Man, is that going to be weird getting used to.
Yeah.
I
feel like we should just say two. Just like a restart, a rebirth.
Welcome to episode two. We're like a phoenix.
Yep. Right, just totally throw everyone off. Like, oh, I thought I was starting at the...
Now's the time for rebranding. Absurdity rebranded into a phoenix. No.
We're going to call ourselves Gary and the Boys.
True. That's exactly what we're going to call ourselves now. Now, welcome to Absurdity, an exploration of all things absurd in culture, religion, and society. And today I'm excited because for a change, we don't have to talk about Adventism. And This is great. This is wonderful.
It's going to be nice.
This one's going to be fun because you and I have not actually talked about this subject yet, literally at all.
No.
And
I mean, we both discovered it on our own.
Yes.
But we haven't discussed
it. I have no idea what your thoughts are on any of this.
Yeah.
Normally, we have a general sense of where we stand on an issue before we jump into a recording. But yeah.
It's been a crazy summer, really.
Yeah, it's been insane. I'm surprised that we've managed to stay on top of things. But
yeah, so far.
Yeah. Well, hey, before we jump in to the topic, I do want to let listeners know that we do have a new way to give to the podcast. I know there are some people that are kind of nervous about Patreon, may not like it, may not be a big fan of it. Totally understand. Patreon is still active, patreon.com/absurditypodcast. But if you go to theabsurdity.org/donate, and that link is in the show notes, you can also donate through PayPal. And you can do that as a monthly donation, or you can do that as a one-time donation. There are people that have wanted to donate and support the podcast, so I've created this as an option as well. And you will still get the same perks that you get via Patreon. The difference is that I'll have to email you episodes in advance rather than, I'll send you files in advance rather than you getting it via Patreon. The one advantage that Patreon does have if you use it is A, it's less work for me, but B, it also gives you a private RSS link that you can copy and paste into like Apple Podcasts or any sort of podcatching app. And you can actually access the ad-free and bonus episodes via any of your favorite podcasting apps. And I haven't figured out exactly if there's a way I can make that work with PayPal donations yet. But if you do want to give and support this, it would mean the world. Every dollar helps make this possible and make this better. There are some things that I want to do as far as expansion is concerned, and I'm unable to do them quite yet because I don't have the money to do it. And so if you want to see Absurdity grow in its capacity and what it's doing, I would highly encourage you to donate and to help us out that way. So now that that ask is out of the way, let's talk, Tony.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the Super Cup. Hey.
Well, we're talking about the tea today.
So there's been over the last few years, I think there's been this kind of slew of people leaving faith, whether it's pastors that are leaving the faith or whether it's just Christians in general. But the big thing has been celebrities. And I don't mean celebrities like A-listers in Hollywood or even C-listers in Hollywood. I mean celebrities within the evangelical Christian world. And not only are kind of a lot of them, it seems like a lot of them are leaving. I think the number is actually lower than what we tend to give. I feel like it just feels like there's more, but
it tends to get on the news more.
Yeah. I think the other thing is that was actually what I was going to say. In addition to people leaving, so is the coverage of people leaving. And so like you've got documentaries. I think Vice did a documentary a couple of years ago or a year ago about pastors who have left the church and what their deconversion experience was like. And I think Vice even interviewed this guy that works with, there's this whole like counseling network for pastors who are leaving faith. And I remember in that Vice documentary, there was one pastor who's an atheist and still the church wants her to pastor their church. And so she just gives very kind of humanist kind of the values that she used to preach as far as how to treat each other and the importance of community. She just doesn't do it with Jesus Christ in the mix anymore. And so there's been this kind of huge, this uptick of that kind of news and that kind of information. But just within the last few months, there's been two really notable people leaving faith. The first one being Josh Harris. And you may not know that name, but Josh Harris is the guy who wrote the book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye, the book that almost every single person, whether they're 13 or in the age of range of like 12 to like 21, hates.
Well, even 30.
But I mean, like when they're given, like they hate them right then.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's when they're given the book to read.
Most Christians that I know of, just straight Christians, were either forced to read it or read it on their own. So it was a really popular book.
Yeah, it broke up a lot of relationships. It did help people like actually establish their own boundaries and everything.
And that's true.
Over the last probably 3 or 4 years, Josh Harris himself came out against that book. He's like, look, I was 21. I didn't know anything. And I disagree with everything I wrote in that book. And I understand I've caused irreparable damage for a lot of relationships and a lot of people. And I'm sorry. But just like a month ago, maybe he actually announced that he's no longer a Christian. Yeah. Yep. July 28 is when I'm looking at an article. Yep. And he's saying he both announces that he's no longer a Christian and that he is, and that he's getting a divorce. Yeah. And in addition to that, he also is supportive and affirming to the LGBTQ+ community. And he included an apology in his announcement that he was leaving faith. Right. So that happens. People talk about it. Cool. Then the next thing that happens is Marty Sampson, I believe is his name. Yes. Marty Sampson. Yeah. Yeah. So Marty Sampson leaves faith, and Marty Sampson is one of like the most prolific worship leaders and songwriters within the Hillsong community. If you look at his Wikipedia and look at his like his credits, dude has been on some of the biggest tracks that Hillsong has put out, or at least some of the most timeless ones.
He's like one of the four main guys.
Yep. And like so
Marty, Joel, Taya, and there's another guy, and I can't remember his name, but like they're the main movers.
Yes. And so he posts on social media, and I think Relevant grabbed it after that, because either he deleted the post or I don't remember. One of these posts got deleted at one point, but Marty Sampson had been leading worship with Hillsong for 20 years, and he leaves and he says, time for some, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but we'll link them all in the show notes for you, but I'm going to read some highlights. Time for some real talk. I'm genuinely losing my faith, and it doesn't bother me. Like, what bothers me now is nothing. I'm so happy now, so at peace with the world. It's crazy. This is a soapbox moment, so here I go. How many preachers fall? Many. No one talks about it. How many miracles happen? Not many. No one talks about it. Why is the Bible full of contradictions? No one talks about it. How can God be love yet send 4 billion people to a place all because they don't believe? No one talks about it. Christians can be the most judgmental people on the planet. They can also be some of the most beautiful and loving people, but it's not for me. I want genuine truth. And says that science keeps piercing the truth of every religion. And so, you know, some of the general reasons that, like, if I'm being honest for some of this, this sounds like, and I'm not trying to make Marty sound like he hasn't worked out his faith for himself at any point in time, but this sounds, some of this to me Sounds like the typical like high schooler kid that grew up in the church and is like starting to question things for himself or herself. And so they're like, see all these contradictions, I'm out. And I just find that, I do find that interesting that there's that parallel there.
Yeah. Cause I mean, and it's not a knock on him. The Bible doesn't have contradictions. If you've actually studied it. Now, if you're a fundamentalist, then you get into a lot of issues. But if you actually study the Bible, particularly with the human hermeneutic that Adventists have, which is the historical grammatical, which basically is just the Bible was written by humans, but authored by God. So there are, you know, grammatical issues or something. It was written in a historical stream, but the Bible doesn't contradict itself. The problem is if you are raised in a place that has a bad hermeneutic and bad theology, not necessarily evil theology or oppressive theology, but just bad theology, you're going to see, it's going to seem that way. Well, like, he brings up this idea of like, oh, well, how can he send 4 billion people to hell? And I'm like, well, he doesn't. That's bad theology. That's a tradition that is not, it's very clear that that's not a part of like the biblical definition of what hell is.
Well, I mean, but to be fair, there is a criticism of Adventism's interpretation regarding hell,
too. Oh, of course. And I'm not saying
along this same exact line, by the way. Yeah. Along this same exact line.
Right. And I'm not saying that it's like we have it perfect either. I'm just saying like that's something that somebody who has not figured out his own faith and just is relying on what someone else is saying and hasn't gone through himself and actually read through the Bible and been like, all right, well, what does this mean? What does this mean? What does this mean? They just go, well, that doesn't seem to go with that. And the guy that I go to for answers didn't have good answers for it.
Yeah. And I think some of that I'm not going to question his motives for leaving. I think he's being 100% honest here. Like these are just some reasons and there's no way that you can condense an entire deconstruction into one post of 3 paragraphs. Like it's just not going to happen. So on Instagram of all places, right?
But it is interesting to me, like those are the points that he went with. So I was like, all right, well, if that's what you're going to leave me with, you know what I mean? Like, okay, that's what it's going to sound like. Yeah. It's not, you know, like there are valid reasons for walking away. And anyone who feels like they're not following what they believe, they should walk away.
Yep.
You know, if you're following something you don't believe, I mean, go for it. You know, it's just interesting to me that those were the reasons he picked. Cause I'm like, all right. Yeah. Those are very similar to, like you were saying, someone that hasn't really figured out for themselves and actually stayed through.
Well, and so I think
it is interesting.
I think too, he ends interestingly enough, cause he ends on a lot of the values and principles he would have been singing about in Hillsong all these years. Mm-hmm. He says, love and forgive, absolutely. Be kind, absolutely. Be generous and do good to others, absolutely. Some things are good no matter what you believe. Let the rain fall, the sun will come up tomorrow. All of those seem very biblical in their... It's just interesting. He basically casts off the supernatural aspect, but keeps the moral or ethical teachings that he grew up with, which is fine. Everyone does a bit of straining when they're figuring out what they do and don't believe anymore. So it's fine. Like, I mean, literal straining, like a strainer, like, you know, a filter, basically.
Yeah, filters. Yeah. Filters.
And so I get it. And look, I get that he left. And honestly, for someone whose entire career is based on this, like we've talked about this before when I think we did an episode on can pastors question their faith? And it's very difficult to do so when you realize that you're going to give up your entire livelihood. Yeah. That's really hard. Now, granted, I'm not as worried anymore as I used to be about that because someone like Marty within the atheist community will likely get just as much attention because in the same way that Christians like to latch on to atheists who convert into Christianity, we go, oh, look at this. See, we were like it as evidence that we were right. Atheists will do the same thing. And the bigger the name they can do it, the better.
Well, it was like when everyone was going nuts over Stephen Hawking saying, no, there is a God. I was like,
Yeah.
Like I was very skeptical at a young age. And then of course he flip-flopped again, which is not to knock him. I'm just saying like everyone latched on and it was like, hold on. Cause he's not that's really not what he's saying. And then sure enough, he was like, nope, there isn't a God. And I was like, you know, that kind of a, And it happens a lot. It does happen a lot. The other one that was Malcolm Gladwell. You know what I mean? Like, everyone just lashed. And I go, the dude's an author. He's a very, very smart author. But, like, he's not a theologian. Why are we super excited that... I mean, I'm super excited that anybody believes. I think it's awesome when anyone believes. Because I do believe that in my own genuine heart, your life is going to be better when you follow Christ. But I don't think... I don't think a celebrity following... or even a super intelligent or well-read person, intellectual person. I don't think that's any more or less important than Joe Schmo or Jane Schmain, who, you know, joins up out of the blue. You know, I think it's all exciting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but we tend to latch onto them. We tend to be like, oh, see, this is proof of X.
Yeah.
And what's interesting to me is because of that nature, people tend to react very strongly to that.
Yes.
To those conversions one way or the other.
Yeah. No, that, and I think this is exactly what we're going to dive into today, which is the idea that people do react pretty strongly to this stuff. And I think this is a perfect example of John Cooper from Skillet, which if you've never heard Skillet, it's like one of the biggest Christian rock bands.
They were hard. They were pretty hard.
Yeah. I think they have some really, really soft songs too.
Oh no, they do.
Yeah.
But just compared to like where Christianity was in the '90s, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And they've been going for 20 years as well. Like they've been going a while. And so John Cooper, the front man for Skillet, he posts on Facebook on August 13, right? So just 5 days ago, or I guess the time people are hearing this 2 weeks ago, but, so he jumps in and he feels it's his duty because it's too important for him not to say it. Any questions? What is happening in Christianity? Once again, links in the show notes, not going to read it all, but just the highlights. He says more and more of our outspoken leaders or influencers who were once faces of the faith are falling away. And at the same time, are being very vocal and bold about it. Shockingly, they still want to influence others, in parentheses, for what purpose, as they announce that they are leaving the faith. I'll state my conclusion, then I'll state some rebuttals to statements I've read by them. So he has this long post, right? And what I find interesting is he prefaces it by saying, firstly, I never judge people outside of my faith, even if they hate religion or Christianity. That's not my place. I have many friends who, I love this. I have many friends who disagree with my religion, and that is 100% fine with me. I have black friends. I'm not racist. That's what he just said.
A little bit.
However, when it comes to people within my faith, there must be a measure of loyalty and friendship and accountability to each other in the word of God. All right. So first of all, he opens by judging the people who've fallen away and are still posting about it. Then he says he doesn't judge because he has friends that he doesn't judge. And then he says that people within his faith need to be held accountable. So he first addresses the church. He says, my conclusion for the church, all of us Christians, is that we must stop making worship leaders and thought leaders or influencers or cool people or relevant people the most influential people in Christendom. And yes, that includes people like me. I've been saying for 20 years that we are in a dangerous place when the church is looking to 20-year-old worship singers as our source of truth. We now have a church culture that learns who God is from singing modern praise songs rather than the teachings of the word. I'm not being rude to my worship leader friends and saying that singers and musicians are good at communicating emotion and feeling. We create a moment and a vehicle for God to speak. However, singers are not always the best people to write solid Bible truth and doctrine. Sometimes we are too young, too ignorant of Scripture, too unaware, or too unconcerned about the purity of Scripture and the holiness of the God we are singing to. Cool. So I actually agree with a lot of that. 100% agree with a lot of that. I do think we should stop making cool people and relevant and good speakers, and I include myself in that. In fact, in any episode, it should, like, if you ever come to a moment where you think, surely Ryan would not do this terrible thing, or you think, surely Tony would not do this terrible thing, surely they're different, then you have a problem. And we have a problem because maybe we've presented ourselves as being more perfect than we are, which is hard for me to do because I'm already perfect, but you can't really present yourself as more perfect if you're already perfect. But I think...
I believe in more perfection.
Thank you. I think you have a problem if you start to believe that someone isn't capable of doing a bad thing or someone bad isn't capable of doing a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's, I think, and that includes us. If you think, Ryan would never say this thing or do this thing. No, yes, I would. Like, just assume that everyone would, and leave yourself room to be pleasantly surprised when they don't do it. Almost like
Daniel Tosh has a fun bit about this. I'm not advocating you listen to Daniel Tosh, but he talks about how every time there's this serial killer, like, his neighbors and friends and family are like, I can't imagine he'd do it. He's like, well, then you're an idiot. Like, I love my mom, but if the next day, you know, someone was like, she murdered 14 babies, he'd be like, you know what? I've seen her look at babies before. I could see it.
Yeah.
I could see it. And it's in a funny way. But that's the truth, is like every single one of us is capable of terrible, terrible things. History proves that over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And if you, I mean, just even recently, look at the Rwandan genocides, look at what was going on in Germany in World War II and the German occupied countries, where people were just straight turning a blind eye to the atrocities going on. Soldiers that were like, well, that's bad, but I'm just going to let it happen. And that's the point, is like, no, we are totally capable of terrible, terrible things. The mob mentality is a phenomena that, you know, we will just because everyone else is doing it, we will do something crazy. That's totally out of our character, because all of a sudden there's just something that takes over. So yeah, anyone is capable of anything. And I've always said this, anyone is capable of bringing someone else to Jesus Christ. Everyone is capable of leaving the faith.
Yeah.
And you just have to have that mentality of like, there's no way this person, just because someone has great, incredible truth and brings you to the faith, doesn't mean that they themselves cannot lose that faith and walk away. Yep. It doesn't mean that what they said wasn't true. It just means that they no longer believe it.
Well, and let's be clear. If you could have imagined that person would do that terrible thing, you would have reported it or said something.
Right.
So really, when we say, I couldn't have imagined that person doing it, really what you're trying to do is vindicate yourself. That's all we're doing. I would have never imagined. I'm not involved in it. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, because you totally see weird stuff all the time.
Yeah. And I'm not saying it's bad to vindicate yourself. If you really didn't know, you didn't know. But like, that's my point. If you did know, you would have said something. So of course, I just think that there's this idea of we do build up people too much. And when those people fail expectations, we blame it on those people.
All of a sudden, we are shocked and amazed that that could possibly happen, as if they are incapable of doing that.
Yeah,
as if that was not a possibility. You know,
yes.
Yay, the whole world may fall, but they may not. It's like, no, that's God. Like, you've put them in a place where they are divine, and that's dangerous.
Yep. So now. John continues. This one's a long one, but I'm going to just hit his main points. I'm not going to try and like read a whole bunch of this. He literally lists them out in order. 1, 2, 3, 4.
You kind of have to do it this way.
Yeah. He says, I have a few specific thoughts and rebuttals to statements made by recently disavowed church influencers. I love the, passive aggressive aggression here, right? To disavow church influence. We know who you're talking about, dude. Just say it. Like, what are you doing? Just say it. So he says, first of all, I'm stunned that the seemingly most important thing for these leaders who have lost their faith is to make such a bold new stance. Basically saying, I've been leading this thing for 20 years, led generations of people with my teachings, and now I no longer believe it. Therefore, I'm going to boldly and loudly tell people it was all wrong while I boldly and loudly lead people into my next truth. And so he says, I'm perplexed why they aren't embarrassed, humbled, ashamed, fearful, confused. Why be so eager to continue leading people when you don't know where you're headed? Cool. Second thought, why do people act like being real covers a multitude of sins, as if someone is courageous simply for sharing virally every thought or dark place? All right, cool. Then, thirdly, there is a common thread running through these leaders and influencers that basically says that no one else is talking about the real stuff, and that's just flatly false. I just read today in a renowned worship leader's statement, how could a God of love send people to hell? No one talks about it, as if he is the first person to ask this. The church has wrestled with it for over 1500 years. Children talk about it in Sunday school. There's like a billion books written about it. Just because this is probably the one point in this that I agree with more than anything else, which is he says, and this is worth reading the last line of, he says, just because you don't get the answer you want doesn't mean that we are unwilling to wrestle with it. And he says, we wrestle with scripture until we are transformed by the renewing of our minds. I love this because typically we say, I think what we all mean when we say we don't, no one's talking about this is, we say people aren't talking about it in my circle, or people aren't talking about it in the way that I think they should talk about it, or they don't have the angle that I think they should have. And I think I can agree with a lot. I can agree with the general sentiment of that. Lastly, and most shocking in my opinion, as these influencers disavow their faith, they always end their statements with their new insight or new truth that is basically a regurgitation of Jesus' words. I'm disavowing my faith, but remember, love people, be generous, and forgive others. And here he makes
he's basically straight quoting Marty Sampson at that point.
Yep. So if he wasn't being passive aggressive earlier, he is now.
Just aggressive at that point.
Yep. So he makes the case here with this last one, where he says, those are biblical principles taught by a prophet, priest, and king of kings who wants us to live by a higher standard, which is not an earthly standard, but the kingdom of God. Therefore, if Jesus is not the truth, and if the word of God is not absolute, then by preaching Jesus's teachings, you are endorsing the words of a madman. He brings up a bunch of the fanatical or fantastic claims that Jesus makes. So then why would a disavowed Christian leader promote that generosity is good when a madman is the one who taught it? How would you know what is good without Jesus teaching? And will your ideas of what is good be different a year from year to year based on your experience, cultural trends, popular opinion, etc.? I'm amazed that so many Christians want the benefits of the kingdom of God, but with a caveat that they themselves will be the king. And then he ends by calling the church basically to rediscover the preeminence of the word, to value the teaching of the word, and to value truth over feeling and truth over emotion. So, cool. I get why he says this. I get why he feels the need to say it. I don't think this was really necessary. And I honestly think it would have probably been more effective had he actually just called up Marty. And I think if he was going to say anything, I think the only thing in this whole note, this whole Facebook post that he says, I think the only thing that he should have said was that second paragraph written to the church. If there's anything that he should have said, I think the one written to the church is the one.
Yeah. That has the most value. Yeah,
I honestly don't like this at all. I'm just going to be 100% honest. I really don't like this entire statement from John Cooper. And I find it funny that he made it, because he went on Bad Christian podcast recently and they asked him tough questions and he refused to answer them. And it's hilarious that he refused to and like it causes huge backlash among Bad Christian listeners, because they were like, wow, he's not willing to take a stand for anything. Now he did. And I just think it's funny that suddenly he's got courage now. And my issue with this is the whole thing very much is judgmental, because this entire thing is basically it's assuming the motives of Marty Sampson and Josh Harris. That's what it's doing. It's absolutely assuming the motives of them. On top of that, it's completely ignoring the context that they come from. And I'll get to that, I guess, that with the next part that we talk about. But I just think I think we do ourselves no favors when we demonize those who leave the camp or who are not in Christianity. I think we do ourselves a huge disservice when we demonize them by saying, you can't believe what we believe without believing in Jesus too. Like you can't live the way that we live without believing in Jesus too. How dare you? Like, it's almost like we're personally insulted that someone would do something good or something kind or something loving or forgiving someone, without also believing in Jesus. Like, no, that's our belief. How dare you take that from God? And I don't like that at all. Like this to me just reads incredibly condescending. And I get that he's writing from a place of frustration and hurt and annoyance and anger, but it is really, really judgmental and condescending in its tone, in my opinion. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this one?
What concerns me about John Cooper's response is not what he said necessarily, but the fact that he's not focused on an individual who's clearly in pain and in a, I mean, I hate to, it makes it sound like anyone who's not a Christian is just wandering blindly in the dark, slamming into people. I'm like, look, you can leave. I told this probably to kids who were a little bit too young, but I go, you can leave the church and you will have good days. Like, it's probably easier leaving Christianity.
Once you're actually out and established.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you're out, like, it's probably an easier life because you can just do what you want. But I believe that when the dark days come, that it's a lot harder. Like, you don't have anything to rely on. It's great or quote unquote easier when everything is fine. But on those really, you know, when life really hits you, I believe that having a belief in God, having a faith in God, and having a God that responds, you know, I believe in a providential God, a God that exists in the here and now. And he comes to my aid and my comfort and my rescue, not in Proverbs, in old writings, but in a very real presence. And I believe that even on the good days or great days, that he's still there, but it really comes out in the hard times. And I, as a human being, find that most of my growth comes from when God is asking me to grow more like him. I become a better person when that happens. Now, that being said, when someone leaves, I care more about the individual than the hurt they're doing. Because to me, I always say, look for the second layer. If you know anything about, like, irony, there's always this thing called Socratic irony. And it's like a third level. Like, there's the beginning of satire. There's like a second level of irony. And then there's this third deep, deep level of irony. And I always say, when everyone speaks, there's a surface meaning, there's a secondary meaning, but oftentimes you have to look for the third hidden, like, why did this come about? And to me, with Mari Sampson, I think we talked about it very quickly. Like, I think he's just starting to figure out his own faith, and he's realizing that people don't have answers, and he hasn't, it seems, on the surface. I have not talked to him. I have not done in-depth research into his spiritual journey. I'm only going on what he has put out there publicly. But going off of what he has put publicly, it sounds like this is a guy who's reeling, because everything that he has taken as fact, he now has to decide for himself. And he goes, well, then if that's all I have to, if all I have to decide is based on the actions of these Christians, then I decide that that's not valid.
Yeah.
And instead of seeing someone who is in pain, because going through a divorce is, you know, I listened to a podcast recently by Andy Richter, and he was talking about how he never cried, but he's going through a divorce and he's crying more in the last 4 months than he thinks in his whole life. And he goes, you know, sometimes he's talking about being vulnerable, and he goes, you know, sometimes I can be a little bit too vulnerable with people. You know, the security guard's just like, sir, this is a Wendy's, like, you know, please don't, you know, I don't know how to do it. But he goes, but I'm fine with that. But that's the reality, is divorce is horrible. It's this terrible, painful thing. So for Joshua Harris to admit, I'm no longer a Christian and I'm going through a divorce, instead of attacking him, well, I don't believe Jesus would be like, oh, you don't believe in me? Come here. It's okay. We'll deal with that later. I just want to hug you right now because you're going through something. Even people who attack me, my natural reaction is to slap back, you know, to clap back right at them, because that's the natural human reaction. But then I've prayed long and long and hard, you know, God, allow me to see beyond that, to see beyond enough and to have the self-control enough to not react to the situation, so that I can say, hey, clearly this is someone who is in pain. This is an individual who needs love more now than when they're supporting me and affirming me. It is when they leave their faith that they need the most love and support from the Christian community. And it bugs me that to me is what I find the most disturbing.
We tell them they were never really a Christian, or we tell them
they're lazy. Yeah, and we go after them instead of, you know, and to me, I'm like, well, is that what Jesus does to the sheep that lost its way? You know, I have to be careful when I say this, because I believe his heart was in the right place, but I also believe that the road to hell is lined with the good intentions. The pastor up at Oshkosh, the Oshkosh Camping, it just came down from that. He did a sermon on Sabbath morning, and he talked about the three lost people, and he described it in a way that I feel was not accurate. And some people may disagree with me, but he talked about these stories. And even this guy that I think was not doing completely correct theology, even though he stereotyped and combined an entire generation into, oh, these millennials that just walk away. He was saying, you go out and you go find the lost sheep. You go find it. So when someone walks away, you go find them. You go to them and you find them and you rescue them. Not in a violent way, but obviously in a loving way. And you go and you love them. They've walked away. Therefore, you go love them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah. Even someone I disagree with, I'm like, no, that was correct. That was right. That's what you're supposed to do. You go find them and you love them. And to me, that's just the opposite of what they were doing. That's the opposite of what this post has in mind. It's a way of, and I get, like you said, he's frustrated. He's, you know, seeing these type of things. And to me, that's why, because I actually agree with some of the stuff he says there. I mean, I think it is wrong for us to deify these people. And, you know, I think there are a lot of things. I think if he made it a lament to the church that look at these people who are now in pain, who are leaving the church, we've done something wrong, not look at them, they're doing something wrong. I think if he'd done it that way as a lament, yeah, and we need to do better. Come on, family. You know, come on, fam. We can do better. We need to start changing this, because this is going to keep happening as long as we you know, don't admit these faults. I would have been okay with it. Yeah. I would have been okay with a lot of it. Well, and I think it would have changed the language what he used. Because, again, I don't think you should ever go after him, you know. But it would have changed the language. Yeah.
And let me be clear too, with the comment that I made about Marty being, it sounds like he parallels a high schooler or college kid questioning his faith. Like, that's not a bad thing. Interesting. So I just want to go back and defend that. Cause I was like, wait a minute, you guys said, we just found it interesting.
No, but and that's not demeaning anyway. I'm like, I'm not demeaning him for doing that. I'm just saying that it sounds like that's something that I think a lot of people who are fairly new in their faith also go through.
Yeah.
They go through a similar struggle like that, where they look at people and they realize people are A, fallible, and then that, you know, when they put their belief systems on a person or someone who gives them answers instead of searching it out for themselves.
Yes.
Not saying that he isn't, but I'm saying that's where the parallels are. It's not the meaning.
Well, and I think too, the other side of this is we tend to just see the announcement. We don't really see the journey that took place. And so it seems like all these things are happening out of nowhere, but really these are probably the result of them thinking and praying and talking and journeying through this for years. This isn't something that just one day they woke up and said, oh, not a Christian anymore. Sorry. These are real journeys that people had, and we try to just judge their entire experience based off of one social media post. And I think Marty, and that's all we have. But I think, so Marty Sampson sees John Cooper's response to him. So he responds again in another Instagram post.
A rebuttal to the rebuttal. Yep.
And this I agree with more so than almost anything else. This is what I love. Yeah. If I had to take a side, if there were sides, there's a lot here with Marty that I resonate with more so than John. And this doesn't mean I'm an atheist, so chill, everybody. He says, to think that I am trying to influence others without even asking me if that is my intention is offensive. Did I write an article on myself in Relevant Magazine or Christian Post quoting myself? Do I need this kind of criticism and an honest examination of what I believe from complete strangers? I have never even met you, yet you presume to know me or people like me. I only ever posted about this is what I mean by context in an earlier comment, right? He says, I only ever posted about this to explain to people, 4K followers on Insta, I may add, where I was at in an honest and genuine way, not to influence them in their beliefs, not to draw attention to myself, not to have a voice, to wrestle and to learn and to grow and to present. And here we go. This is it. And to present my current state of mind and heart to explain to people why I'm not, quote, coming back to Hillsong or answer the question, when am I going to sing on the next United song? That right there is the context that John ignores. These are people that will constantly be badgered, and they've lived their life in the spotlight, and they almost have a duty to their followers to let them know, hey, I'm no longer the thing that you expected me to be. And that you're used to me being. My life has changed, and I'm no longer going to be providing the service. What would you be Like, I think I remember, yes, I do remember this. A friend of mine worked at Best Buy, and she showed up for work one day, and the Best Buy was closed completely. It was just closed. She showed up for work. There was a sign on the door, this Best Buy is shut down permanently. There was no notice that she didn't have a job anymore. There's nothing. Just she showed up for work. No one called her. No job. And so do you want that from people like Marty? Right? He's like Best Buy, no longer providing a service. He's letting you know, I'm no longer going to be doing the thing that you thought I was doing. And so then Samson turns it on its head. And I love that he's being very straightforward with this too, right? Where John was like, I'm going to talk about all these influencers passive aggressively. Marty jumps in on this straightforward. Instead of people like you asking genuine questions, you jump to conclusions when you could easily ask, who's trying to influence whom? Why, when someone is influencing others, does this cause the kind of, this is my favorite line, I think. Why, when someone is influencing others, does this cause the kind of panic in a truth so strong that it cannot be shaken? I, for one, don't see this kind of shock and horror in the scientific community when a theory is usurped by a new and contradicting theory. Perhaps this is the nature of religion. Say what you will, I have no opinion on you or your life. I do. This is why I think Marty's actually been atheist for a good while before he's announced this, because he's already starting to use language and term and phrasing and terminology that tends to be used by atheists for a while. But I also think that there's, to some extent, I have seen instances where the scientific community has reacted with vitriol to competing theories. So I, you know, not going to say anything to that, but really, like, John Cooper is the one who wrote with the express intent of influencing people. While John reads in and projects onto Marty and Josh this desire in themselves to influence others away from faith. And I find that really ironic. I find that really interesting. And I find that really terrible, to be honest with you. While I think John is actively trying to influence people, and I think what guys like Marty and Josh are doing are just being honest. And I think that's why I appreciate Marty. I really appreciate people who leave the faith and who have the guts to do so. The people I'm not saying that it's the ideal, but I think the kind of courage that they show is a kind of courage that more Christians should show in questioning their own faith. I think I do think there are some who question and they just don't like the answers, so they walk away. Fair enough. I also think others who don't want to accept the answers, fair enough. Or they're looking for a very particular one and they walk away. Cool. But I think by and large, just the willingness to question their faith and to challenge. Most atheists, I feel like, know stuff better than I do in my own faith. There's a lot of atheists that I feel that way because they've spent years and years and years interacting with this in a way that's unique from the way that I have. And so they may be able to, but this is what I find interesting. While I typically find atheists better at recalling facts or verses from scripture, they have a harder time with the principles behind them. So they're really good at basically throwing verses at you, back at you, the way that, and proof texting you in reverse. But I don't see them do a lot of the other kind of work. And fair enough, they don't believe the other kind of work is necessary. The quotes can be taken at face value. But ultimately, I tend to be with Marty here. Like, in defense of atheism, I would say I'm grateful for it, because there's no better sounding alarm that something is wrong in the house, that something's going on, than when someone leaves. That's why in interventions and when people go deep into addiction, one of the first things that happens is their social circle changes. Or one of the last things that happen is the people that love them the most finally kind of stop enabling them. And when that happens, they go, oh no, something's wrong here. People are walking away from me. I've done something terrible. The people I thought never would leave are leaving. Something's wrong. And I think that's the kind of sound alarm we should have. Whether we've been addicted to a certain way of life in Christianity, a certain expectation or culture, whether we've been addicted to, or, you know, whatever it is, I don't just mean to say it within the framework of addiction, but whatever patterns and traditions we've fallen into that are causing this kind of thing to happen, we need to, including attacking those who leave the faith. I think there needs to be I think we do need to look inward and say, what are we doing that's causing this and how can we fix it? Because right now, the reaction I see to people like Marty, if there's anyone else who's questioning their faith, saying, I don't know about this, and they see Christianity's reaction to this, they go, Well, if I'm not sure this exists and all these people are treating someone like this way, then I'm out. I don't want a part of this. Like, if anything, we're adding to the, by treating these people with hatred, vitriol, and judgment, if anything, we're giving those that are doubting faith and on the edge of it all the more reason to leave. And that's tragic to me.
Yeah, it's a rough situation because I think that's part of it. I think the other part really is that Marty and Josh did have a huge influence, and whether or not they wanted it, whether or not they intended for it, whether or not that's something that they benefited from. The reality is they did benefit from it. They built careers off of being influencers.
Yeah.
So I think John does have a right, in a sense, to call them out. I think it's...
I wonder
some instances if there wasn't like a controversy, you know, that kind of, a lot of Hillsong is now starting to examine their faith. There was an interesting article written by Relevant Magazine with Joel and a couple other of the leaders there. And they're like, yeah, you know, we're really stopping and examining our faith instead of just cranking out. And to me, and that sounds horrible, but the last couple of albums that they've made, I felt personally, and I'm not ascribing this to anything else, but I felt like with Hillsong United, I'm like, they don't feel as spiritual. They don't feel as biblically significant. To me, the last one that I truly, truly felt moved by was Zion. And I felt like it was very biblical. I felt like it had a lot of scriptural connections. And the last couple albums that have come out, they just felt very light and fluffy to me. Nothing really stood out. It didn't feel deep. Mm-hmm. And that's just, it could be a personal style. I don't know. But I found it interesting that all of a sudden this came out and they were like, yeah, you know, we kind of just, we stopped to examine our faith and we're not sure and all this different stuff. And I go, well, okay, it's interesting to me. I think it's important that we as people who have influence are aware that every decision you make, especially if you're going to benefit from that influence, it's going to put you in the public light. So that's why people like Conor McGregor, you know, going nuts and, oh, well, you know, I didn't, you know, this guy, they come after me because I'm a celebrity. It's like, well, yeah, but you're making money off being a celebrity. So you are in fact entitled to having people's opinions. You know what I mean? Like, you've put yourself in the public limelight. Therefore the public's going to have something to say to you. It's just, you know, a occupational hazard, unfortunately. And that's not to, everyone has to grow. I'm totally willing to, you know, mature, move on, do that type of thing, but also be aware that you can't cry foul. So I think John Cooper has a right to say something about that. Again, I think the tone is wrong. I think that the spirit of it is wrong. I think what he says has some value, and I think we need to examine that. I think it's important to examine that, but I don't want to say that anyone who's struggling with their faith should be quiet about it. That's not what I'm trying to say. I think you need to be aware that when you have an influence, you're going to have backlash. Mm. You're going to have people who disagree with you. I told my little brothers the other day, and I was somewhat quasi-joking with them. I go, leadership is you making decisions and everybody getting angry at you. Because they were talking about like, oh, you know, I want to be a big leader when I grow up. And I go, okay, but just be aware that leadership is basically you making a decision. People paying you to make a decision. You make a decision and everyone gets mad at you.
Yeah.
And so to me, I kind of understand where John Cooper's coming from, where it's like, dude, you were an influencer. And now the thing that gave you so much money, now all of a sudden it feels disingenuous that you're trying to keep that same spirit from the thing that gave you money while walking away from the core part of that culture. Or
but
belief
what,
system.
I get, but what spirit is he keeping? I don't understand.
It's the humanity of it. Because here's the thing, and I will say
this.
He mentioned this, that musicians have a better, do a better job often of creating or expressing feeling. So they create a feeling for the Holy Spirit to move, but don't really do a great job a lot of times of theology. So it feels a little disingenuous that he's trying to keep that same feeling of happy, you know, warm, let's all get together and enjoy life, but do it, you know, so and that's what John, I think, is trying to say. Now, that being said, I think that's unfair. I do think it's unfair because I don't
say,
think,
I think that
that's what Marty was trying to do. But I can understand why it would feel a little disingenuous if say, for instance, all of a sudden, let's put it in a secular context. Let's say, what's his name? The really old white guy with the braids, country singer. I know. I want to say Waylon Jennings, but it's not. And it's like the most obvious name ever.
No.
Anyway, Willie Nelson.
We've got it the exact same time.
I know, right? Yeah, right. Let's say that Willie Nelson all of a sudden comes out and says, no, I am totally pro-gun, pro-violence, pro-war, all these types of things. But hey, man, you know, like, let's keep pulling weed. Let's keep getting together as a community, you know, the government's good, but hey, we can still love each other. And it's like, okay, well, it feels a little disingenuous that you're trying to keep the same crowd that you're with that gave you all that fame and money, but then completely shift everything. The central core of who he was this kind of anti,
yeah,
you know, establishment person. And all of a sudden he flips around and it's like, no, the man's cool. It would feel disingenuous in that way. And so in that way, I can somewhat understand where John Cooper is coming from when he's like, dude, Jesus is the one who gave you all these morals. You're going to walk away from him, but then still try to keep the audience. I don't think that's what Marty and Josh are doing.
I think he's assuming it.
And that's where I'm going. Yeah. Like that. I'm with you that he's assuming that. But the sad thing is there are so many people who have done exactly that. In fact, I haven't read it, but I just saw an interview where Billy Graham's grandson or something had a controversy. And instead of like apologizing, he like doubles down or something like that. Like, I want to read through it more. I just kind of saw the blurb of it. But it's kind of like that, where it's like, there are so many people who have kind of had these moments where they've had opportunities to be genuine, to say, I'm losing my faith or whatever. And said they try to drag, you know, the audience along because they don't want to lose the paycheck. And I think that's what John is responding to. And I think it's a little bit unfair that Marty and Josh happen to be caught in the crossfires. Because again, my answer to all that is I wish he had looked at the individual and said, look, you are going through something and I am so sorry. How can I help? Because to me, what would signify better what Christ did on his earth than someone coming up and pardon the kind of pun, I guess, pontificating about how evil you are, or someone just coming through and say, my brother Marty is going through something. If you need anything, let me know. I am praying for you as you go through this transition. I'm so sorry that you're going through this. If you want to journey together, let's journey together. What would be more influence? And I'd like to add, what would be more likely to keep him to help him return to the church? Because he didn't say, I have completely lost my faith. He said, it's very close.
Mm-hmm.
And he clarified that in his second statement. And I go, what is going to make him come back more? Someone who's loving and reaching out and saying, let's journey together, man. And if you don't come out the way that we do, that's fine. But let's journey together. I love you. I know what it's like to be in the public eye. I know what it's like to have that kind of pressure. I know what it's like to struggle with your faith. Let's journey together, man.
Yeah.
Or, you know what? I'm so sick and tired of these people being so two-faced and hypocritical. You know, even if that's true. What's gonna represent Christ better? What's gonna make them join, and what's gonna make them say, "See, I told you this is how they'd react." That's my two cents, I guess, on that situation.
Yeah, I understand trying to, like, I do think if there's a bad guy here, I don't think any of them are trying to be the bad guy, but I think the person who does the more egregious thing is John out of them. And I mean, just because I agree with a lot of what he says, I think we should value the preeminence of the word. I think we shouldn't idolize leaders and speakers and people who are high quality in production. There's a lot here.
He had such a great line where he said, you know, just because we don't come with the answer or just because we don't get the answer we expect doesn't mean we stop wrestling the scripture.
Yes.
And I go, that's such a great line. It just happens to be sandwiched in this angry thing.
Yeah. I think my thing with Marty too is I think I see him trying to do his readers and his followers justice by letting them know where he's at. And I think the other thing he's trying to do here, when I read this from Marty, this original statement too, I see it a little bit of fear of him thinking that he's going to be labeled this bad person because he thinks the way he thinks now. And that's why I think at the end, he says what he says about being kind and love and forgive. Absolutely. He's saying, look, I may not believe this anymore, but I think that, but I want you guys to know, I still believe that loving is important and being kind is important. And I'm suddenly not a bad person because it sounds like he's really trying to preemptively defend any sort of kind of argument that way that would be against him. But I think
he's not like sacrifice all the babies.
Yes.
He hasn't. Yeah. Right.
But I think, I think he can have those beliefs without Jesus. And I think it's okay to have that. I think you can believe things. I think you can hold love and kindness and forgiveness as a value and as an ethic without God.
For sure.
And
I think it comes from God, whether or not you acknowledge it.
Fair.
You can still do that without acknowledging who God is.
Yeah, fair. But that's my point is you can do it as far as claiming independence from God.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong
with
that.
Which is part of free will. I mean, that's part of free will. Like, I don't get why Christians are so angry by that. I'm like, no, that's free will. Like, that they're doing exactly what God get. Like, if God had said, don't do that, and then they, like, I'm more offended by Christians not acting like Christ than I am by people who don't believe acting as those who do believe. You know what I mean? Like, I'm way less offended by an atheist doing something good than I am by a Christian doing something bad.
Yep.
Because I'm like, if you're claiming to be a Christian, you need to act that truth out.
Mm-hmm.
And we all make mistakes. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not here to hold anyone's feet to the fire. If anything, I'm holding my own feet to the fire. But I am way less offended by an atheist, you know, rescuing puppies or saying, hey, we need to not burn this world to the ground. You know, let's, you know, maybe, you know, stop corporations from completely destroying this planet. That doesn't offend me because I'm like, well, they're taking care of the planet. That's God gave us stewardship of the planet. I believe that. I'm less offended by that or whatever than I am by a Christian not doing it. It's the story of, you know, the Good Samaritan. Yep. And I think that's really it is, you know, if Marty is our thief that has been waylaid by the demons of, get a little Southern Baptist in here. If Marty is the poor soul who's been waylaid by the demons of doubt.
Yeah.
We must be the good Samaritan who walks by and binds him with our oil of love and healing.
And then you've got the analogy broke down. In addition to you want to know this is really annoying. I just saw this because in the article that Marty Sampson's original statement is they at the bottom they add some tweet responses from notable Christians or whatever from Twitter. Ken Ham joins in, the guy behind the Creation Museum and Answers in Genesis and all that, right?
Very smart man.
Yep. So he says Popular Hill Songs, songwriter Marty Sampson walks away. He specifically mentions science trying to understand a loving God and people going to hell and supposed Bible contradictions. And he claims no one talks about such matters. And then he goes, and then Ken Ham does this. He goes, actually, that's probably true in many churches and homes. But it's not true at Answers in Genesis and our two attractions, Ark Encounter and Creation Museum. Why? We produce many resources dealing with these topics to help parents and churches teach the truth about true science confirming Genesis. Okay?
Help me, Peter.
All right, Ken Ham's the bad guy.
All right, folks, in case you were wondering what capitalism looks like.
Seriously. You just took someone's statement of like genuine, like I've wrestled my faith. I've no longer left it hurt and pain. And you've used it as a way to market yourself. And
like a bad, cheap telemarket, like, I would not be surprised if all of a sudden, and if you order two sets now, we'll also toss in the ShamWow. Like, oh my gosh. I got to get a drink of water. I can't.
Yeah, there's nothing here actually about, he literally only responds to Marty's claims and not Marty himself. I really hope that your mic picked that up so I can keep it in the episode. But yes, that okay. I've decided that's the worst part of today.
He's the bad guy. Yep.
Ken Ham is the bad guy.
Can that be the title of our episode? Can that be the title? Ken Ham is the bad guy.
Kaiser Soze? That's Ken Ham is Kaiser Soze because it's the twist at the end of the movie.
Ken Ham is the Kaiser Soze. Yeah.
Yep.
That'll be the name. All the usual suspects.
All the usual suspects are Ken Ham.
Yeah. How do you? Goodness gracious me! Oh my.
Yep. So
but
I
yeah,
think,
like that's. I think that really is. I think that's. But that kind of sums it up, doesn't it? Like that's a little bit what John Cooper's doing.
Yes.
Like, he's kind of like exploiting. I mean, he's doing it for a different reason, obviously, but he's kind of exploiting that.
Let's be clear. So are we.
Absolutely, but I think it's to discuss. We're not making money.
I mean, technically,
we hope
we do make some money from.
Well,
this
that's
podcast.
True. I mean, that's true.
But
I mean, that's
my
true.
my point being, like, I don't think we're capitalizing on it in the same way
that's
Ken
what
Ham
I'm looking
is
for.
Doing.
Yeah,
yes.
Like I'm not trying.
But
to
yes,
sell
we
something.
Are, but we are taking advantage of this to talk about it as a podcast topic.
Well, that's
but,
true.
And
I think that's what he wanted us. I think they wanted us to do.
It inspires conversation.
Yeah,
it's not a bad thing.
We're not trying to like say, but it's just, And again, that's someone not, I mean, it's just, I have the same problem with that I do with the whole thing. It's like, that's not caring about the individual. That's not like you've made it either about yourself or about something that it's not. Instead of saying, hey, here's someone in pain, church, let's, how can we wrap ourselves around this person?
Yeah.
How can we so love them that even if they leave, they still want to be a part of us.
I would love to see just this outpouring of people messaging Marty and just saying, and even John, but especially Marty and Josh Harris in this case, and just saying, hey, proud of you for what you're saying. I want you to know that I'm praying for you on your journey. And I know whether that means anything to you or not. But really grateful for your honesty, for your authenticity and,
absolutely.
And for not deceiving your followers too, because what's worse, the fact that there are a ton of Christian bands that are only Christian bands in name, but they're all atheists. They stopped believing long ago, but it's their job. Or someone who was a Christian worship leader and is honest about things and walks away from it so that he doesn't deceive anyone.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because what's false witness? You know what I mean? False witness isn't lying. It's that exactly that. Mm-hmm. It's claiming to be something that you're not.
Yep. So I think the way forward from here is absolutely to stop demonizing the people who leave the church and who question faith. I think that's the biggest answer to this episode. And I think that's what really bothers me about all of this is we demonize it and we demonize those people without actually treating them as people. And we shoot ourselves in the foot doing it. And it's tragic and it is so frustrating to see happen. And I have no problem if honestly, I'm going to go ahead and claim John's own reasoning here. If he believes that he has the right to hold people accountable within faith and he believes that that's a thing, then same deal. The reason I'm so harsh on John Cooper and harsher on him than I am on Marty Sampson is very much because because John Cooper is a part of the club still. And he does subscribe to the accountability. And so his statement does lend itself to more scrutiny at this point than someone who claims to have left. And that's just reality to me. But I do hope that those of us who are on this end of it can respond with love and with support to those who are questioning their faith and on a real journey about their life. So, Tony, any final thoughts?
But I say to you, I mean, Ray, this is my final. You have heard it said, as it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to counsel. Whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. That's not the one. But that too.
I believe in you.
There we go. Yeah, you have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, Matthew 5, 43 through. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you only greet your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? You must therefore be perfect, as your Heavenly Father is perfect. We got to love the people who disagree with us and who go after us. And those are the people that we need to love the most. And that's how we prove the radical, insane, otherworldly, anti, you know, the difference that Christianity has. The anti-sin, the anti-selfishness that Christianity has and holds. The only way to do that is to love the people who disagree with us and go after us and who are clearly in pain. And so that's my final thought.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for listening. All of our contact info is in the show notes. And any way to financially support us is also in the show notes. But we appreciate you. We appreciate this journey. And let's keep going and seeing where absurdity leads us. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.